Hello, everybody. Welcome to a brand new podcast that we are excited to get started called Minor Details, in which a few people who know a little bit about each of the Cubs farm systems are going to chat initially once per month, and we'll see how it goes from there. But it'll be myself and the other minor league broadcasters with the different Cubs affiliates who you all know and have heard from on different platforms, just getting together to talk about the season so far, what's going on, different players, the schedule, any exciting promotions to keep in mind as we move through the 2025 season. So with that, we'd like to welcome in everybody from the Cubs farm system and the voices you hear on MILB TV and streaming. And we'll start with Richie Giuliano in Knoxville, first year as the Knoxville Smokies. Richie, how's it going?
It's going great, Jason. I appreciate you having me on here. As you mentioned, our return back to Knoxville for the first time since the 90s. So I think everybody's gearing up for that. It's going to be an exciting return back to the city. And, you know, with that, we do have a week and a half off on the road before we actually come to our brand new ballpark at Covenant Health Park. So I think everybody's really excited. The fan base, a lot of it came from West Knoxville. So, you know, a closer drive here than to Kodak. So I think everybody's really excited to have this team back in the city.
And then I guess the veteran presence here in terms of tenure with the Cubs farm system, Brendan in South Bend. Brendan, how are you guys doing?
That's so weird to hear, man. I mean, it's everything's good. Good to see you guys. Jason, hope you're enjoying my off-season city of Indianapolis. Hope you can get over and get some St. Elmos. I will say, during the duration of this, pardon any hammers and jackhammers and nails and anything, because they're working hard still on some construction here at Four Winds Field and getting the second deck ready to roll. We'll start on the road up in Beloit, and then we'll have our opening day here on Tuesday. So can't wait. Looking forward to Luke and Jason getting their first reps in the org, and you know, Richie and Mick do a great job as well in formerly Tennessee. That's gonna take some getting used to. Formerly Tennessee, now Knoxville. So can't wait.
And you alluded to it, if Brandon's the veteran, then Luke, I guess you're the brand new guy. What, you're about a week or two into your time in Myrtle Beach. How's it been so far?
Yeah, a couple of weeks, but first off, I'm just so blessed to be part of the Cubs organization. My first couple of weeks here have been very busy, a sprint to the finish line as we open on the road in Charleston for a three-game set before coming back home for the home opener in Myrtle Beach. So I'm going to follow in BK's footsteps and say, if you hear any of the construction noise, we do have a few extra days before the home opener, but we're really excited to get going, and we're excited about the group of guys that we expect to have.
This is opening day for each of you three. The iCubs started last week on Friday and currently in a two-week road trip in Indianapolis and Toledo, and we'll talk more about that in a second. But I guess we'll start it in Knoxville again with, you know, talking about construction, and each of you mentioned it, but there's kind of this in minor league baseball now, everybody's doing improvements during the offseason over the last two or three seasons to get up to that major league standard. And a lot of it is behind the scenes, but in Knoxville, it's everything. So what's it been like to sort of see that come together, a brand new ballpark that people have been really excited about?
Yeah, it's been an incredibly long but a fun project for us. You know, our scoreboard's in the shape of Tennessee, one of the biggest scoreboards in minor league baseball. We no longer have the bullpens on the field anymore like the fans were used to in Kodak with all the new PDL requirements, major league requirements. We got to put them out in the outfield. So that's really cool. Brand new ribbon boards. We're going to have smoke shooting out of the scoreboard. The lights are going to flicker when we hit home runs. So a lot of that new technology that's being placed in different ballparks is now coming to Knoxville. So it's going to create that cool experience for our fans on opening night, which is April 15th. And then we also have some cooler things around the ballpark, like we're having a brewery now attached to the field. We're having restaurants in different retail spaces like they do in Atlanta. So, you know, kind of that community involvement here at Covenant Health Ballpark, where you don't just come to the game to watch baseball anymore. You come here to have a good time, come to eat, drink, hang out with your friends and family. So I think it's going to bring that that extra engagement aspect to this space, not just baseball anymore, but also having a nice night out with your family and friends.
So if you have a relatively new ballpark in Tennessee, the scoreboard has to be shaped like something, correct?
I guess, yeah.
It's in Nashville. You guys have to say, How excited is everybody to show off the new ballpark to the players and a lot of guys who have been there in the past to kind of get their reaction when they walk in for the first time this week?
Yeah, I mean, we spent a lot of time down in the clubhouse getting that thing ready. We put video games down in there for them. So, like, they have Golden Tee, NBA Jam, Galaga. They'll be able to play that. They have, like, their own kitchen area, brand-new couches for them. And one thing that's pretty cool, I think that they're going to be excited about, the players have their own friends and family area, so they don't have to wait outside. Mm-hmm. So right outside of the clubhouse, there's two doors, and they have their own lounge area for their family and friends that can wait on them for after the game or before the game. They don't have to stand outside. They got a TV, and they got a little area where they could spend some time and get to know each other. So I thought that was pretty cool. I think that our players, our coaching staff's going to appreciate that. So those are some things that we're really excited for our players to see.
Brendan, I think South Bend, back when I was in the Midwest League, I was always in the West Division, so our trips east were things I looked forward to, and South Bend, obviously one of those places. You mentioned some hammers in construction. Is there anything new people can expect when they head out to the ballpark this year?
Yeah, well, first of all, good memories getting to visit you out in Quad Cities, and it's great to have you now in red and blue and on our side. But no, I think so the construction and the renovations here in South Bend have always been in two phases. So phase one has been getting the brand new playing surface ready that was put in right after the season in September. So the grass has had an opportunity to grow. They put in actual dirt on the warning track. It used to be turf. So brand new playing surface that, you know, players from every organization can look forward to playing on. And then, you know, if I could describe and kind of paint the picture of what I'm looking at, the second deck has been put up here at Four Winds Field. And as they're continuing to get the suites ready and as they're continuing to put in the new seats upstairs, they've also replaced every seat, kind of a Wrigley Field green color here at Four Winds Field all throughout the ballpark. Every seat has been replaced. Every seat is brand new. So, you know, not a brand new stadium like Richie and Mick in Knoxville, but, you know, they continue to refurbish South Bend. And I think, Jason, when you were in the Midwest League, I don't think the apartments in left and center field were up yet. Those, of course, have been around since 2019. And, you know, I've had a chance to live there now, and they're spectacular. And, you know, what Andrew Berlin, our owner and chairman, has done. I mean, he's a investor and part owner with the Chicago Cubs, working with Tom Ricketts every day. And, you know, he, at the end of the day, is bringing the Wrigley experience the best he can here to South Bend. I mean, you got the rooftops, you got the style of color and the feel and, you know, the pregame ambiance. So, yeah, I mean, I'm very blessed, you know, like Luke was saying, to not only be in the org, but to work here. I'm about to start my sixth year in South Bend, and it's absolutely flown by. So, and I feel like every time I come back here in the month of April, there's something new going on. There's some kind of new construction. There's some kind of new feature to the park. So continually, it's a pleased but never satisfied approach, and looking forward to folks being able to see this on opening day on Tuesday.
I've always wondered, I think the apartments in the outfield is kind of a minor league staple now. If you're building a new ballpark, eventually you have to have some type of living space in the outfield. And I always wondered about living there when you work for the team. Obviously, there's pluses. Is it tough being somebody that they know is next door literally 24/7 when you're not on the road?
I'd say it has its pros and cons, but the walk back home at night is quite nice. You don't have to get in the car and drive home. It is kind of cool because a lot of the players live over there too, and our manager Nick Lovello, him and his wife and his dog have an apartment together. So, you know, a lot of times, I mean, that's, you know, as broadcasters, that's sometimes the access you're looking for, walking home at night with a player, walking home at night with your skipper, even on the road, like when the hotel is in walking distance from the field, you know, a lot of times on your way out, even after a win or a loss, you know, you can catch up and kind of get those little nuggets of, or not even that, just building relationships. I mean, that's a big part of what we do, of getting connected with a team. It's those off-air moments at times of stuff you're not going to mention on the broadcast, but just getting to know somebody on a personal level, I think that's a big deal.
And Luke, you're not, you know, fully ingrained yet. You haven't seen a game day yet in Myrtle Beach, but what have you heard since you've been in the office over these couple of weeks that has you excited for the season and that people can look for if they come from Chicago down to Myrtle Beach, or if they're in the area and going to head out to a Pelicans game?
Yeah, no major changes in terms of the ballpark and structure, really. Staying the same, but that's kind of how we've liked it here in Myrtle Beach, is paying a little homage to the Chicago Cubs, to Wrigley. You know, we've got Clark and Addison Grill, and then some fun twists, you know, here and there. Like, we've got the beach down the left field line. So, so many different ways to take in a ball game. You can find whatever avenue you feel like suits you and your family best, but really creating that family environment here at the ballpark. Super excited to have people in and out. And we do expect to have some really good baseball with, you know, the Cubs organization being one of the top ranked, you know, minor league systems in terms of talent right now, all the way through. I think all four of us here are very excited for the talent level.
Have you heard about the Chicago style pizza burger yet? Did anybody let you know about this?
I have heard about it. I have not gotten my hands on it.
So here's the thing. I made Sam Wiederhaft, the former voice of the Pelicans, eat this once a series when Charleston was in town. So I would like you to at least continue. You can pick whatever team you want, but when they come to town, I would recommend not eating lunch or breakfast on that day, because what it is two pizzas like this big, like a personal pizza, right? Two of them, with a giant burger in the middle. And it is fantastic. But you don't want to eat lunch, and you're probably not going to eat breakfast the next day. And you also want to do it right when they open the gates, because it takes a while to make, and you don't want to eat that right before you go on air. So please tell us. I can't wait until we do this in the first week of May or the last week of April, and you can describe to us what your first experience was like. But don't let me down.
I won't. And you know, we'll keep it true. Hopefully when Charleston pays their first visit here, we'll keep it the same schedule and everything. I might have to come up with some video, you know, get that distributed, because I don't know if I'm made of tackling that whole thing, but we're going to give it our best shot for sure.
All right, let's talk about this point. Obviously, we're choosing to do this right before the season starts, sort of the most stressful and crazy time of the year, if you will, for people like us who work in baseball, and especially who are going to be going on air and trying to sound like we know what we're talking about for nine innings every night. So whoever wants to go first, but just kind of give me an idea of the things that go into getting ready for opening day. For me, I just remember, you know, you finally get a roster. You know, people think we know it a while ahead of time, but you really don't. You have some good ideas. In AAA, it's a little easier because you know who didn't make the big league club when they break camp. And so you can kind of do some simple addition and subtraction to get to a pretty good list of who's going to be here. But obviously, the media guide, if that's your responsibility, is a big one. Getting the broadcast set up. Just kind of take me through, whoever wants to jump in first, where you are right now and how much you're looking forward to opening day. Coming up here in just a couple hours.
Yeah, I'll take it. I think the big thing to cross off the list immediately is what you brought up of media guide, game notes, getting the roster solidified. But also, I think it's actually really helpful, and you know, Richie can probably attest to this because he's been in the org for a couple of years too. It's such an advantage, not only to guys like us for getting the reps on Marquee Sports Network, but to have that available and to watch the rest of you guys. I mean, obviously everybody has MILB TV. You can tune in anytime, but I think every team in the org does a great job of highlighting the big guys on the team and telling their stories. You know, Alex Cohn did a great job of that. Sam Wiederhaft did a great job of that in their tenures, and you guys will too. But it's helpful because we would get guys and I would feel like I already had a decent grasp on who they were and what they did as a player, because Sam did a great job of highlighting them in Myrtle Beach. And hopefully the same can be said for South Bend guys going to Tennessee for Richie and Mick. And then, you know, vice versa for, you know, guys going to Alex at the time and now Jason. So yeah, I mean, it's a huge week of meeting people and getting every detail you possibly can about a guy. And it's difficult sometimes because oftentimes there's, you know, a language barrier once in a while, and you just want to learn as much as you can. But yeah, I mean, getting the game notes ready, crash coursing, but it's also helpful because I would imagine we're going to have a decent amount of returnees, and you can tell some stories about last year, like Brian Culmer hit a walk-off home run here last season. Pedro Ramirez hit a walk-off slam. So, I mean, those are always highlights and calls you can bring up as you go.
Yeah, I'll jump in and piggyback off UBK. You mentioned you get guys in years past, and you feel like you already know them, not only just following along the broadcast, but, you know, we converse with each other for fans. So when I get a guy here in Myrtle Beach, the moment that guy gets sent up, all my information is going to be sent right up the chain, and then, you know, you guys can add on to that, and then it goes all the way to the very, very top. As far as what we're doing here in Myrtle Beach right now, every year we do a meet the team party at a local restaurant, and so we have a lot of fun with that. So my first introduction to the players was receive the roster and immediately start getting together a couple lines about each guy just to introduce them to fans and kind of facilitate a question and answer thing with fans. And so the people here in Myrtle Beach really get to experience those players firsthand with us. And then going from there, prepping the game notes and all the usual things down the list. But really establishing those relationships early, and then finding one little storyline, and then prying as much as you can at that so that we can find a really cool story to deliver to our fan base.
Yeah, I'll kind of hop in with a little bit of a different storyline because of all the construction we got going on, and BK might be able to attest to this, but, you know, game notes and media guides, rosters, all a top priority here in Tennessee, but, you know, right now for me, it's still putting together tables and chairs for our fans to enjoy at the ballpark. So we're working night and day, trying to get this thing ready to go for the 15th. We're going to have crews in Birmingham. We're going to have crews in Rocket City to cover the games. But, you know, for us right now, our front office has leaned on everybody in this organization to help craft this ballpark. And even the broadcasting team has been able to go down there, help receive deliveries, help build some of the furniture for this ballpark. So it's a little bit different building a brand new stadium. We're still looking forward to having the players and all the coaches share their storylines. And kind of the same thing that Luke said, what we like to do is put together a list of all the players that we have, and then we use OneNote and create stories for them. And then, you know, once we get our interviews done with them, we go and publish them either on the web or try and get a little interview here or there. So it's just like those little tidbits like Luke was talking about, just a little storyline to kind of introduce our players to our fan base to start. Because you guys know it's always changing. By next week, we're going to have a completely different roster. So when you have the chance to tell a nice story about a player, you got to capitalize because you never know when you're going to get to tell that story again.
So now let's talk a little bit about baseball and the season. And obviously we're a little bit ahead here, a week ahead, but got a look at the Iowa Cubs for the first time, a roster that a lot of people are excited about that have come through most of your guys' cities as well. Opening night, Ben Cowles, who was acquired in the Mark Leiter Jr. trade, hits a home run. Owen Casey hits a home run. Connor Noland looked really good on the mound. Brooks Kreske was great out of the bullpen. And then game two of the season on Saturday, a little bit of a hot start. The I-Cubs got up 7-2 and then gave up 10 straight to Omaha, the reigning International League champion, before being snowed out on Sunday. And then it's sort of odd. We had a great opening night, 80 degrees. 7,000 plus fans, and then we're on the road for 2 weeks in here in Indianapolis, and then to Toledo, and then kind of a second opening day, if you will, with St. Paul coming into town in the middle of April before back into the normal week on, week off schedule. But it's been a really cool start. I've heard a lot of great things about Iowa, and to see it in person was amazing. And I think you guys know this as well. Then when you leave and go on the road, things kind of settle down a little bit. There's not as many people coming to your desk. Not as many people asking for things. They have to actually email you or find a way to talk to you in order to make requests. So it's been a perfect start to the season in that regard. Richie, what is your schedule look like to open the year? Obviously, you mentioned a couple of weeks on the road, but remind everybody when that first home game in Knoxville is, because I'm sure a lot of people are going to be interested in either coming out or tuning into that one.
Right, so we're going to start the first nine on the road. So the league allowed us that week and a half to kind of prepare for the opening of a brand new ballpark, which I thought was generous and really much needed. You know, with the playing surface, it's a brand new playing surface for all the players, so need to get that smoothed out and looking 100%, which it will be by April 15th. So that's going to be the opening night here at Covenant Health Ballpark. It's going to be a 7:30 Eastern start. We're going to have pretty much a party outside, right? The opening of a brand new stadium. We're going to bring live music out there. We're going to have face painters, activities for kids, families, everybody to enjoy out in our brand new plaza outside. And then the gates are going to open at 5:30. So It's going to be a big party and a big celebration of a project that's taken over 3 years here in downtown Knoxville, but we can't be more excited to get things going.
Brendan, what does the schedule look like in South Bend to get going?
Yeah, so as you said, since this is coming out on Friday, opening today in Beloit, so probably going to be a little chilly. I actually prefer to open on the road. I don't know about you guys. Opening on the road is just super lax. It gives you a little bit of prep. It gives you a little bit of dust off the cobwebs vibe for the home opener, in which we'll open on Tuesday the 8th against Peoria. Hoping for some sunny weather. I don't know if we'll be as sunny as Luke down in Myrtle Beach. It looks like a nice warm day per his short sleeve polo. But, you know, we got the layers ready. This is kind of a really random nugget. So I don't know exactly why. I still have to ask the Beloit front office. But on opening weekend, they are hosting a guest appearance from Rudy Rudiger, the actual Rudy, like the guy that actually made the sack, not the actor. And we're in town. I don't know if it has something to do with us being in town. I don't know if he has a history in Beloit. I got to ask. But anyway, so I'm going to show up. He's like, hey, like, it would probably make sense for Rudy to do an inning of South Bend Radio, right? So potentially an interview with number 45 coming up this weekend. We'll have to see. But no, so we'll play three against Beloit, which is a great new stadium, ABC Supply Stadium, right on the Illinois-Wisconsin border, and then six against Peoria. And we'll go to Grand Rapids in West Michigan for six, and that will get close out to the month of April. By the way, potential. I don't know where he's going to go, but we did not see Max Clark with West Michigan last year. We had already played them. He ended the season. He did pretty well. He hit in the 260s. So not sure if we'll get a Max Clark sighting against the South Bend Cubs, but there is potential.
I will agree with you. It's great starting on the road. The only caveat to that is how the schedule is now. I love a Friday home opener compared to a Tuesday. Those are the only two.
Agreed.
It's nice to start on a weekend, but it is so much easier when you start on the road because it's like a hidden four extra days of get into the season until it really hits.
Those broadcasts don't count. It's like they're practice. They throw it out the window. It's like a preseason NBA game. They don't count. You know, the real one is the home opener.
And then, Luke, I know where you guys start. I spent the last 4 years in Charleston, and that's pretty much a tradition. Those have become rivals right down the road from each other and often meeting in the playoffs. But what does it look like after that?
Yeah, we've got a small team going down there, kind of cover the game. And, you know, it is the season opener, so we want to get as much coverage on social media for all of our fans. Following that, we'll get back from that trip over the weekend. And then the 8th on Tuesday, just like BK and South Bend Cubs, we'll get going on the 8th. That's a six-game series here at home against Carolina. So we'll get that rolling, and we're really looking forward to it. Things are all coming together. The field's looking pristine. And as you guys mentioned, the weather is perfect here right now, nice and sunny. Do have the short sleeves on. Very, very excited, not only for the weekend opening series in Charleston and Jason's old stomping grounds, but then to come back home and get to experience it one time with our fans.
This is a sort of a tough question because rosters change so much. And so for those of you who are on the road all the time, it may be an easier answer, but I wanted to talk about, you know, is there a team or a city that you enjoy going to or a team that you enjoy playing in your league? It's kind of tough to have a rivalry, right? Because from month to month, it's completely different players. It's more between the front office and the fans a lot of times. But I'll just say I'm excited. Later this year, Worcester comes to town to play in Des Moines. And I think that's going to be a cool series. Right now, they have pretty much a who's who of Red Sox prospects there, Marcella Meyer, and so on. So I think that's set up to be a big series. And people just generally seem to be interested in that week in Des Moines. We also are doing interleague play with the Pacific Coast League this year. So Sugar Land comes by us. And then the following week, we go to Vegas. So I don't think any of the guys are complaining about that. I'll be interested to see the record that week and how being in Vegas plays into that. I would imagine it's a tough road trip. A lot like Myrtle Beach is in the Carolina League. You put the team right on the beach, and guys tend to be out there in the sun a little bit more than normal, and that might be a little home field advantage there in Myrtle for Luke's guys. But is there somebody, Richie, that you look forward to seeing each year or a place you've liked going?
Yeah, I love watching the Montgomery Biscuits because they're in the Tampa Bay Rays farm system, which, you know, a lot of us know that they produce one of the best farm systems in all of baseball. I mean, last year we got to see Carson Williams, who was their number one prospect, Chandler Simpson, a guy is relatable to Pete Carl Armstrong. He gets from first to second in the blink of an eye. Trey Morgan, that first baseman who played down at LSU. I always love watching Montgomery because they always play as tough. And they always have a great farm system. So you know you're going to see some talent somewhere up and down on their roster. And I like Montgomery because it's a, you know, an older city down in the deep south. Always great weather. It's always warm. I know, you know, Luke can attest to the warm weather down in Myrtle Beach. So it's always nice when you get down south. You're closer to the water. You kind of get that wind blowing in, and it feels nice. So, yeah, Montgomery is usually the team I enjoy watching the most.
I never made it to Montgomery. Have you ever had a biscuit there?
Yeah, they're good. They're really good. But I'll say this. I think that their pulled pork is better than their biscuits.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a bold statement.
Bold statement from me. Yeah. They've got a Dreamland Barbecue right across from their stadium, across the railroad tracks. Probably one of the best barbecue spots I've ever had. So if you're down in Montgomery, check that out. Yeah.
BK, you've been in the Midwest League for a while. So I'm guessing you have an answer that's been the answer for a while. What do you got?
Well, I mean, I think you'll agree with me that there is no better sweet setup than the West Michigan Whitecaps in Grand Rapids. Mm-hmm. There is a personal waitress that takes care of any necessity you could want. They literally, for Richie and Luke, they literally hand you the sweet menu, and you could order whatever you want. Wow. You could order a buffet if you want to.
Tell them when you want it. Third inning. Yeah. 50 yeah. minutes before the game, it's amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, they'll walk in. It's like, here you go. Can I get you a drink? What else can I do for you? I feel like I need to tip them by the time the broadcast starts. You know, I need to leave like a $20 bill at the end of each series. So we'll go there in April. They draw very well. Hopefully it's not too cold because to broadcast a game there, Jason can attest, is fun because they draw very well. Same could be said about Dayton. They draw extremely well. Always good to catch up with our pal Tom Nichols, who is the elder statesman of the West League,
sure.
And he's the man. But and then last thing I'll say is up in Appleton, Wisconsin, they do like homemade cheese curds, and they're ridiculous. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, I've pretty much got got all the food specs down in the Midwest League. I can write a book on it probably. I mean,
I'm from Wisconsin, so the cheese curds. I'm from that area. That hits very close to home, and that's why I needed to get back to the Midwest, because the cheese curds are much more realistic and not as much of an imitation thing as they are down south. Fort Wayne too is a pretty good trip. I love broadcasting there. It's like I tell people it's like a major league stadium just shrunk down a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I tell people too, like, with respect to all the other great stadiums. I mean, You don't feel like a big league announcer until you go call a game in Fort Wayne. I mean, that hits different.
What about for you in the Carolina League? Is there anybody you're looking forward to playing or a place you're looking to go? I'm assuming right now you're pretty excited to get down to Charleston, but you have any thoughts on who you're excited to see?
Yeah, not exactly sure. Haven't seen a roster from them yet. So, you know, anticipating maybe what will be there, and super excited to check out Charleston. I've heard nothing but good things. I feel like I'm a little bit lucky in the sense that one of those fun destinations within the Carolina League would be here in Myrtle Beach, and I, you know, get to reside here. So very lucky in that regard. One of the other teams really interested to see is Columbia, just because I worked prior to last year with the Frisco Rough Riders, the Rangers AA affiliate. I was in the media relations department for the Kansas City Royals. And I grew up a Royals fan myself, so it's always fun, you know, still have some allegiances there. It's full-blown go Cubs go now for Luke Maley in this booth. But very excited to see some of those guys. Also, you add on, the defending champs. Fredericksburg will be fun to check out. Very excited, really, to just, you know, dive deep into this league and really familiarize myself with not only the people and players of this league, but the teams and their locations.
Let's talk a little bit about the rosters that you may have, and by now, the time this is coming out, you will have. Obviously, in Iowa, I talked about it, there's seven of the top eight Cubs prospects according to MLB Pipeline, and all the headlines are Kevin Alcantara, Moises Ballesteros, James Triantos, Ben Cowles, who a lot of people have as their under-the-radar breakout prospect this year. And then you look at the rotation with Connor Noland, Caleb Killian, Cade Horton, Chris Flexen, who spent all of last year with the White Sox. It's a pretty stacked Jordan Wicks. And if you're saying Jordan Wicks' name as the fifth one, that's more of a me blanking for a second there. But it could be a pretty fun roster. And I think having spent so much time in Charleston with Myrtle Beach being the quote-unquote rival, it's such a relief to watch these guys come to the plate now and want them to do well, as opposed to be on the other side when you know they're going to do well, but you hate it because you're trying to beat them. So it's been really nice to see those guys in the clubhouse and hope they have a great night on the diamond as well. But who is maybe somebody that you think might be headed for Knoxville that you're excited to see this year at the beginning or maybe even later in the year?
I'm excited to see B.J. Murray. I think he's going to make his way back down to Double A. You know, he was a part of that run in 2023 when we won the Southern League Championship. And a guy that I love because of his consistency. He's in the lineup every single night. He asks to be in the lineup. He doesn't want to take days off, even when the manager requests that he does, because, you know, that comes down from the top. He always wants to play every day. I mean, a really good switch hitter, a really good glove at third base. Another guy I really enjoyed watching last year that I think is going to make his way back to Knoxville is Frankie Scalzo Jr., a big piece of our bullpen last year. At one point, led the Southern League in consecutive appearances without giving up an earned run. He was up to 19 at one point without giving up a run, which was incredible. And then, you know, Jason, you might see him later in the year up in Iowa. He made an appearance with the Iowa Cubs last year, didn't do as well. Maybe the second time around we'll make an adjustment. But an arm I think that eventually can make his way up to Chicago, a really good slider and a good breaking ball. So a guy that I think will help this bullpen, and a great personality. Was awesome in the clubhouse, very vibrant. So somebody I'm looking forward to seeing again in Knoxville.
What about South Bend? Is there, you mentioned you could have a decent amount of guys back who you've seen before, but who are you looking forward to seeing in 2025?
Yeah, well, first off, puts a smile on my face to hear good things about BJ and Frank. BJ was a key part of that 2022 South Bend Cubs championship team, and Frankie Scalzo Jr. is a part of a no-hitter in 2023, actually finished off that no-hitter. So both terrific guys, and hopefully they do well in Knoxville. But I think, guys, what jumps off the page for sure is number 10, number 11 prospects in the Cubs org, and that's Jackson Wiggins and Christian Hernandez. And you know, what we saw from Jackson Wiggins last year is just dynamic stuff. High 90s fastball, slider that just jumps off the page. Pair that with 12-6 curveball. I actually thought, with all three of those things, his changeup was his best pitch. He came up from Myrtle Beach. First few starts, you know, obviously have an innings limit on him, have a pitch limit on him. But then when they took the leash off, whew, it was something to watch. And you know, had a start of 9 strikeouts. That was a career high. And then, you know, to touch on Christian Hernandez, I mean, the fact that, you know, I think it speaks to just what Jefferson Rojas did at Myrtle Beach, because Jefferson Rojas was really the reason why Christian Hernandez moved to second base in Myrtle. But now Christian is probably going to get a chance to play shortstop here every single day. And talk about taking off the leash. I think that's exactly what he needs, the 20-year-old. And you know what, for a guy as young as he is, I was really impressed last year just how often he used the opposite field and that he was willing to. That's usually one of the last things that those younger hitters pick up, is their ability to use the opposite field and not be pull heavy, but he was not at all. And does the power jump off the page this year? He hit 5 home runs combined last year. With his body, I mean, he was getting comps to A-Rod when he signed for a reason, because that's the type of body he can grow into. So does he get to double-digit home runs? I think if Christian Hernandez has 10 homers by, like, July 4th, that's a pretty strong indication he's really finding the power.
And who are you excited about seeing for the first time in Myrtle Beach? I know it's going to be a young roster for the most part. There are a couple of guys from the draft last year that are likely to end up there, but a lot of young talent from the Dominican Republic and Venezuela. But who is somebody maybe that you have your eye on?
Yeah, there's a couple of guys, both of them on the younger side. A couple we're expecting to see that are in that top 30 for the Cubs, and Cole Mathis as well as Cepeda. I believe they're 15th and 17th respectively in that top 30 ranking. Really excited to see Cole Mathis, guy that plays both sides of the infield, corners over at first and at third, has a really strong arm. I would say projects maybe more as a third baseman. We'll see. Obviously, this is kind of that time where they get to figure that out. And, you know, at this level, so much of it is based off, you know, you can see a little bit of the action in rookie ball for some of these guys. Mathis was a second-round pick last year for the Cubs. And so you can almost look back at college and see a little bit of that, but more so some of these guys that played in the Cape. Mathis was one of those. He finished second in home runs with 11 homers in 38 games. So a guy that has some real juice in that swing, and very excited to see him all around. He's got quite a few tools, so he's definitely up there on my list, still just 21 years old. And then Cepeda, as we mentioned, he's a 19-year-old. So some young guys that are really going to have to learn how to adapt to not only the Carolina League, but just really minor league baseball in general, because they are so young. And so it's going to be really fun to watch them develop, see how they hit the ground running on day one. And then you look back a couple weeks later and maybe they found their footing, or maybe, who knows, they take off right from the jump. I know personally, if I was in their shoes, I'd be a little bit overwhelmed. So you'd have to give me a couple of weeks. But these guys are professionals, and there's a reason why they're on the diamond, and I'm talking about them on the diamond.
All right, we know that the players are obviously important. The games are what we look forward to so much, but minor league baseball is on the same vein, promotionally driven, and we want things for people to be excited about. So is there anything, I'm going to come around and ask, is there anything you're excited about this year that your organization is doing as far as a promotion or a giveaway that people would be excited about? And I'll start to give you guys some time to come up with something, but we've got a pretty good bobblehead set this year, Owen Casey bobblehead on Saturday, May 31st. So that'll obviously be a big one with him coming back to Iowa this year. And then Moises Ballesteros will have a bobblehead giveaway on Saturday, July 19th. So those are, I think, days that Cubs fans are going to be excited about, both locally in Des Moines and then in Chicago. I've seen the Margaritaville night jerseys for Saturday, June 14th, and they are very festive and impressive, and I think that's going to be a good look as well. You can't wear a Margaritaville jersey in Des Moines too early in the season, so June seems like a pretty good time to do that. But I think the Casey and Ballesteros bobbleheads are going to be a huge hit, and I'm looking forward to seeing the line outside of Principal Park before we open the gates on that day. But if anybody else has one top of their mind that you're excited about, feel free to jump in right away.
Yeah, I mean, we have our Matt Shaw bobblehead giveaway, which is on Sunday, June 1st. I think that's going to be a big one. It was great to see him hit a home run over the weekend in Arizona. That was pretty cool. And you know, one of his major league debuts to come out, hit a home run. So we got the Matt Shaw bobblehead giveaway. We got a return to Knoxville pennant on Wednesday, the 18th. And then the next night, we have our alternate jersey giveaway. So we're wearing brand new baby blue jerseys this year with red Knoxville across the chest and gold outline. So hopefully, you know, that's a hit. We're going to be giving away 1,000 alternate jerseys on the Thursday of the opening week. So, you know, come out to the ballpark, check those out, get to the gates early. And I think those are going to be some cool giveaways. And I don't know what your guys' opinion on this is, but we're going to have a Star Wars night as well. So I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan, but I know there's a lot of huge Star Wars fans out there. So I think that's a new one that fans are excited about as well.
I know they do the jersey auctions typically with the Star Wars ones. I was once right in Fredericksburg, and I'm not kidding you, they did a live auction after a game, and Brady House's jersey went for something like $20,000. And I was sitting in the booth just going, this can't be real. And Joey Zanaboni was their broadcaster that year. He's doing this live auction and, like, buying people drinks. And $20,000-plus for a Brady House Star Wars autographed jersey. And I was like, that's a risky proposition for a guy who's in his first few months of professional baseball. But you're right. That just goes to the point. People love Star Wars, and there's always going to be a subset of at least 30 people who want a Star Wars jersey.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And I hope Joey got a cut of that.
I doubt he did, right? But you never know. He,
you never know.
With a new car the next day, I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's funny. So like Knoxville, there will also be a Matt Shaw South Bend Cubs bobblehead. So hot commodity for sure. We'll have a Pete Crow Armstrong bobblehead to go along with a Miguel Amaya bobblehead. Miggy was here back in 2018 as a 19-year-old. That was my first season in South Bend, so that's definitely memorable. And now what he's doing at the big league level. And then there will be the fourth bobblehead will be the new South Bend Cubs mascot, Ivy. Last year they did a Swoop bobblehead to celebrate Swoop's retirement. And the Ivy one should be popular as well. Also looking forward to May 22nd. That's a Thursday night. Cubs Hall of Famer Sean Dunstan is going to be visiting Four Winds Field, and got to catch up with Sean at Cubs convention. We did an interview. Great guy, really kind-hearted, and he was actually a Midwest leaguer, Jason. He played in Davenport.
Yep.
way back when he got drafted out of Thomas Jefferson High School in Brooklyn. So 790 high school batting average, if you can imagine that, for Sean Dunstan. 790.
Yeah, that's impressive.
Real? Yeah, no, totally real.
That'll work.
Man.
Luke, what do you guys have going on in Myrtle Beach?
Well, selfishly, Jason, I'm a little excited to up my game in terms of the beach attire. We've got some Hawaiian-style shirts, you know, for 4th of July, that sort of thing going on. We've also got some branded beach hats going out. We do have weekly promotions. You know, we have the random ones throughout the year that are going to be a ton of fun, and you can check those out on our website at myrtlebeachpelicans.com. But also, we have consistent ones. You know, every Wednesday, dog can get in the ballpark for a $5 ticket. I'm excited for that. I have a one-year-old golden retriever named Chesney that I go home to every night, and he's excited to be here in the ballpark, maybe make an appearance in the booth or two. But little things like that, you know, tons of drink specials, food specials throughout the week to get fans not only into the ballpark to really connect with these players and consume good baseball, but it's just a great family environment. There are some things that are in the works behind closed doors in terms of bobblehead-style giveaways that we can't quite release yet, but those are going to be the ones that are super exciting, just waiting on some permissions from the Riders Association and that sort of thing. But once that gets finalized, those are going to get out. So if you're in this area or planning a trip to Myrtle Beach, definitely be on the lookout for some of those announcements coming up, because there are some things you're not going to want to miss.
All right, just a couple more kind of rapid-fire questions to go around to close things out on our first episode here. Do you have another broadcaster? You're not allowed to say Alex Cohn or Sam Wiederhaf, who you enjoy watching or listening to, or if you know that they're on a game, you're pretty excited about it. I'll go first. And being from Wisconsin, I could say Bob Uecker, which would be very appropriate, but I feel like that's too easy. So I'm going to go with another Wisconsin guy that I always in part chuckle when this guy's calling the game. But Kevin Harlan is somebody that I've always enjoyed, whether it's TV or radio. The fact that he's still as excited about every 25-yard run and provides the detail that he does. He's also the son of former Green Bay Packers president Bob Harlan, so that factors in as well with my Packers fandom, which is a dangerous thing to say on a podcast that is revolved around Chicago. But he also, his daughter is married to Sam Decker, who is a Wisconsin legend. So, but Kevin Harlan, for a lot of reasons, is one of my favorites. Whenever I, very distinctive voice, he's gone viral for the ad reads during breaks in games. And I think, you know, that's the kind of person, he doesn't take himself all that seriously, but also does a really good job. But who are some of the people that you get excited about when you hear on the air or broadcasting a game that you're watching?
Yeah, I'll back you up with another Wisconsin native. So maybe good broadcasters just live and breathe in Wisconsin. But Tom Hamilton, who is the voice of the Cleveland Guardians, is one of the guys I grew up listening to. Always an exciting voice. My favorite memory of his was last year when Jose Ramirez knocked out Tim Anderson behind second base.
Yeah.
When he said, "Down goes Anderson," like he was calling a boxing match. You know, he's kind of known for that, though, not to just have great play-by-play with the action on the field, but off the field as well. He always does, like, a funny job of describing, you know, fans or when a squirrel, like, runs across the diamond or something funny. So Tom Hamilton, another Wisconsin native, always a guy that I grew up listening to, and one of the reasons I actually got into broadcasting. So yeah, I'm going to pick him as my top choice for broadcasters.
I got to know Tom a couple of years ago when I was in media relations in Kansas City, and he is a fantastic human being, obviously an awesome broadcaster, very lively and very loud, but in a good way. One of my favorite calls from last year across all of every sport, really, was his call of the big Christmas home run. That was that was fantastic. Sounded like he was about to fall out of his chair.
Yeah, he definitely brings the emotion to the game, which I love.
You guys have taken two of my favorites. So I'll reach a little bit deeper and go with one of the younger guys on the radio side in Major League Baseball with the Royals, Jake Eisenberg. Really have enjoyed listening to him over the last couple of years, a guy that deserves that position. And he's really done a good job of connecting via social media with the fan base in Kansas City. And I know back in my hometown, the people love him. They love that they can interact with him. They feel very connected. So really enjoy listening to Jake Eisenberg.
So I apologize because I'm totally going to go word salad here because I can't get down to one person. But I think it's got to start with Pat Hughes. I'm very lucky that Pat is my mentor, and him and I have built a friendship and a working relationship in my time in the Cubs org. I grew up listening to him. My grandparents would pick me up from school every day. I grew up in the south suburbs of Chicago, and when they picked me up from school in April, May, August, and September, and ideally October, we'd throw on the Cubs game. And Pat is as kind-hearted and just legendary as he comes off to be on the radio. Another name is Ken Korak, the radio voice of the Oakland A's. I mean, that guy was, I mean, his voice is in Moneyball. I mean, he's all-time legend. I reached out to Ken. I sent him a random LinkedIn DM when I was calling games on the Cape. I think, Luke, we're both Orleans guys. And that's actually, I knew Eisenberg. Eisenberg broadcasted for Chatham that summer. So we were in the same Cape class, and he's the man. But, yeah, I mean, I sent Korak a random LinkedIn DM asking if he could listen to my stuff, and he did, and it was great, and he's the man as well. But I think one story from this weekend, I was covering the Houston Tennessee game, Elite Eight in Indianapolis at Lucas Oil Stadium, and I had a media pass, so I was on the floor getting sound after the game from Samson, and I see a guy in the corner of my eye. He's wearing all red. It's Jim Nance. The world kind of just pauses, like, because he's alone. I'm standing there. I was like, here we go. And so I go up to him, introduce myself, and all-time legend. So it was a quick 30-second conversation, but that was incredible. So
it's a good answer. You picked three good ones, so we'll let the word salad go as you coined it. I think last thing to close it out, and this is always an interesting question to ask, but if you had to pick one play from your career broadcasting, whether it's baseball or not, that is your maybe your favorite moment, where the moment matched with your call, because we all have calls of a great moment that we're like, never play that again. I messed it up. It got a little bit too fast. What would be that play for you? And I'll start again. You know, I've been blessed to call a few championships now, but those are kind of things you see coming. Unless you win it on a walk-off home run, which I've never seen happen in person. But I think it's the moments that kind of catch you off guard. So we had a play in Charleston a few years ago where the team was down like 15, so there wasn't a lot of energy in the ballpark. And we were playing Columbia. Somebody hit a fly ball to left that off the bat looks like a no-doubt home run. And in Charleston, it's a very much a pitcher's park. So the outfielder named Gianti Turner went back to the wall and like paused for a moment, and so I thought at that point he had given up on it, but then proceeded to climb the wall and somehow made the catch about 2 feet over the wall, and this is not a padded, beautifully padded wall that's easy to climb. He somehow, I don't know how he did it to this day, and he can't tell me either, but he managed to make this catch, and it was one of those moments where there was nothing going on in the game and it surprised everyone in the ballpark. And like guys just stood there with their arms in the air, and we're talking about it for a week. So I think that home run robbery by Gianti Turner is probably my favorite to this point in my career.
I'll have to go with Cam Smith when he hit an inside the park home run last year and an absolute blunder at Smoky Stadium. Hits it to left. It was one of his first games in Tennessee. And the left fielder is going back. He misplays it. The center fielder outruns the ball as it kicks back into to left center. Cam Smith, he was settled with a double. He gets it second. He looks over into left center. He's like, oh, my goodness, they completely misplayed this baseball. So then he takes off for third. Center fielder picks it up, panics, chucks it over the third baseman's head. The catcher missed it, and the ball hit up against the padding of the third base dugout. Cam Smith comes home, just trots in at home plate, and I called it like a little league home run because that's what it looked like. It just looked like, you know, pure chaos defensively, and Cam Smith wasn't even intending on getting to third, but he ended up with a home run. And then I think later on it was like MILB that like quoted like the call and was like, it's, you know, little league home run for like Cam Smith, which I thought was pretty cool. So that's kind of something that sticks out to me, a call that, you know, I wasn't expecting. I just thought it was just going to be a routine like double, you know, ends up in a home run for the top prospect for the Chicago Cubs at the time when, you know, he just came off that stint with Florida State where they made it to the College World Series. So, yeah, that was pretty cool. It blew up on, like, Twitter and social media with, we know how much the Cubs fan base loves, you know, seeing their prospects do well. So, yeah, I think that was one of the standout calls that I have so far in my 3 years here.
Not to make this the Cam Smith hour, but he hit a home run in all six games of his series in Charleston last year, shortly after the draft. So it wasn't one highlight, but that was the most amazing thing I think I've seen in person, is to do it, again, in a pitcher's park, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, then Friday, and then you're like, okay, they're just not going to pitch to him. Saturday, he hits another one, and then to cap it off on Sunday, it was the most amazing thing I've seen, and I know that's a semi-touchy subject right now that he's on a big league roster somewhere else, but he was pretty incredible for his short time as a Chicago Cubs prospect.
He was.
Yeah, no, I mean, we had Cam for literally a week and jumped off the page. I'm glad he's doing well in Houston. That the viral video of him making the roster with his family, and that was sick. I'm gonna throw it back to 2019. It was the first of two South Bend Cubs Midwest League titles. Buddy Bailey was our manager. Jason, you know, I would imagine you've met
Buddy,
and yeah, the absolute best and the GOAT, and wish him well. And but yeah, I mean, so I called the 2019 championship. My great former broadcast partner Max Toma had the 22 call. But in 2019, that was my second year with the org. That team was special, and it's funny to think about because there were more big leaguers on the 22 championship team, like PCA, Danny Palencia, Porter Hodge, just to name a few. But the 2019 team maybe had two big leaguers, but that team, that vibe was unlike any other. I mean, when you get on a run and you're going and you're in the middle of it, it's tough because you don't want to take it for granted, but it's so much fun. You kind of get caught up in it. I hope everybody can experience a championship, but very blessed to have had two, and was thrilled with the call, and it's something that still lives on to this day on our radio stations and whatnot. So, just countless memories clinching that night. And again, Jason, a place you know well, Clinton, Iowa. And I mean, the crazy part about that championship was Kendall Graveman, a big league pitcher, was rehabbing with us. The Cubs had signed him that summer because he was coming off Tommy John. They were just trying to see if he had something, if he could help out the Cubs in their playoff push. And we were the only affiliate still playing. So they were like, hey, you want to go to South Bend? He's like, yeah. So he starts game one of the championship series for us, shoves. We swept the Lumber Kings. He was supposed to pitch game five if it went that far. And he still came on the road with us for game three. It was like, no. And he was like, hey, you going to fly? He goes, no, I'm going to ride the bus. Big leaguer, he's a well-established big leaguer by this point, rides the bus, celebrates. There's a gas station across the street from the team hotel. He buys the gas station out of adult beverages. He buys everybody a cigar. Cinema.
That's great. As far as me, I'm still young into this. So I have not yet gotten a championship, but I'm looking forward to the Myrtle Beach Pelicans raising the trophy this year. We'll cross our fingers for that. I think we've got a group of guys and a new manager, obviously following in the shoes of Buddy Bailey, but Yovani Cuevas, who I think Cubs fans, Myrtle Beach Pelicans fans are really going to enjoy. We'll have some content with him over the next couple of weeks and throughout the course of the season. But picking a one moment for me, there was a lot of cool moments, but really the most surreal thing I think for me was last year. I got to call an inning of a Jacob deGrom rehab appearance in which he struck out the side in Frisco, and it was just special stuff. It was one of those where you look at the metrics that pop up on, you know, TrackMan, Hawkeye, whatever you're using to pick up velos, spin rates, and it was, you could tell, this is a little bit different. So it was really cool and fortunate to call his rehab appearance and just happen to have an inning where he fanned the side.
Good stuff, guys. I know opening day is approaching quickly, so I'll let you guys get back to work here, but that'll pretty much do it for the first episode of Minor Details. We're going to try and do this to kind of give you an inside look at each of the Cubs affiliates throughout the season. We'll try for once a month, so that would put us toward the last week of April or the first week of May with an update on how that first month of action went for each of the teams that we're broadcasting for. In the meantime, if you have any questions or topics you want us to discuss on one of the upcoming episodes, please let us know. You can email me at broadcast@iowacubs.com. You could also just ask on social media on any one of our affiliates' team pages or websites, and I'm sure we'll pass those along and share some ideas with one another. So thanks so much for tuning in, guys. Thanks for taking some time out of what I'm sure is a busy week for you, and I look forward to catching up again before too long.
Thanks, boys. Appreciate you.
Guys,
appreciate you guys.